You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 107 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I'm very glad to be joined this morning by two guests, both Ed and Laura. Welcome to the podcast, both of you. Now, we are going to talk about your daughter, Elodie, and her extraordinary experience with Hirschsprung's and a lot of other associated conditions as well, which is just, yeah, incredible. And I guess, I know you're both going to sort of tell the story as we go, but I'll start sort of ladies first, if we don't mind. Laura, would you just like to just sort of take us back a little bit to the beginning?
Yeah, sure. So normal pregnancy with her, there was no concerns there. And then I got to, it was the day before I was 37 weeks, and they said that the baby's a bit small. So they said they want to induce me, and I was like, okay, that's fine, but I'm not doing it now. I'll do it tomorrow because I've got children at home I want to be with, and it's just a lot. And they wanted to keep me in there and then, and I was like, no, I just need a bit of time to process it. So they said, that's fine, come back first thing in the morning. And then, yeah, we went back in, went through the induction process, and I got to 6 centimetres dilated with, yeah. And then they decided it was best to do a C-section because I wasn't progressing enough. And I was like, no, I'm in so much pain. This went on for 2 days, bearing in mind. So 2 days in labour, I was like, nope, I'm so exhausted. So yeah, C-section was the route, emergency C-section. And then she was born, she was born, and yeah, from that point she didn't poo for 48 hours, and she didn't, and she was throwing up green stick constantly, and the nurses kept saying to me, no, it's normal, no, it's fine. So we got sent home 40 hours after she was born. We were home for 8 hours, and they said if she's not had gone for the toilet, like, come back in. So we came back in. And I was very out of it. I was very much drugged up trying to feel normal with so much pain relief. It was ridiculous. And I was a bit blurry as to what went on here. But from what Ed told me, they took her for an X-ray in the A&E bit at our local hospital. And I was falling asleep because I was so out of it. And apparently they saw something, but they never actually told us what they saw. And they just said, you need to get up to Evelina. We're calling an ambulance. And we were like, oh, never even heard of Evelina in our whole lives. So we were like, oh. And me, I was quite naive to it. I was thinking, oh, no, it's fine. I'll probably have to give her, I don't know, something like laxatives and she'll be fine. Didn't even think, even though we did know what Hirschsprung's was because two members of my family have it. But I did mention that through my pregnancy as well. And they said, no, women can't carry the gene to pass on to their children. And that's what I was told by a midwife, by two midwives, actually. And yeah, so we put that to the back of our minds until we went to London, and they were just doing so much stuff that we had never known or seen before. They would try and wash outs, and they were putting cannulas in her, giving her fluids. She wouldn't take any feed. I was trying to breastfeed her and she was just vomiting. So then they had to say, oh, we're going to do 1 mil an hour. And then they upped it to 2, and it just wasn't working. Nothing was being kept down. Her tummy was so distended that they had to do the washouts, and they were trying to get us to do the washouts. Yeah, and it wasn't until she was actually a week old that they actually diagnosed her. But that's only because they went to go do some tests, and then they said, oh, do you know what it could be? And I said, well, Hirschsprung's runs in the family. Could it be that? And then I'm assuming they'd done one of the tests for that. Maybe Ed remembers a bit more detail than I do. But yeah, it was Hirschsprung's. So I remember they took us to a room and explained it to us. But Yeah. Before that's a bit blurry. I think Ed might be able to fill in a few gaps there.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, Ed. I mean, kind of the gaps where Laura was kind of out of it. The man on the ball at that stage.
The thing is, I couldn't put myself in Laura's position. As I said, like where she just had a C-section, literally 40 odd hours prior. You know, she had a lot of pain medication, so we'd got home with Elodie, and I knew before we'd even left the hospital there was something wrong. It was late at night, the night before Laura came home with Elodie, that she was saying she's not latching, and then she did latch, and then she was throwing up constantly. So I went up. Because Laura wanted to breastfeed, which I think is brilliant. You know, they need that colostrum and so on first. But then we had to, last resort was go up, get ready-mades for her to try. Tried them. Nope, still nothing. And I could hear in Laura's voice that I knew she was struggling with it, you know. Tried getting nurses to help her. To get to feed, she wouldn't. She hadn't pooed the next morning, kept throwing up. And I said, you can't release her like that. It's not right. You know, she just had a C-section for one. She's not pooing. She's not feeding properly. And you want to release her. That's not how this goes. But I think this was at the time where they had changed the protocols of releasing babies and mums. And it was up until the 48-hour timescale they were allowed to go until. They had to take her home. If she hasn't pooed until 10 o'clock this evening, then, yeah, come back, sat there and watch that clock. Law, Ada and Elodie had a little nap and so on. A family come around at night. We had something to eat. And it hit 10 o'clock. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That is a really, I cannot imagine what that would feel like. No, not at all. That is so, I can't imagine.
This is far much emotion.
Yeah.
We was in A&E and the doctor was amazing. She was absolutely fantastic. And she still works there now. And when if we'd ever need to go into hospital, we'd go. And if she's on, she's always got... It's you, and she remembers Elodie straight all the time. Done the x-ray, and I believe there, in that x-ray, she had spotted what we learned a week later in Evelina, that she had a malrotation of the intestines and stomach. And where, obviously... As you know, with the Hirschsprungs, it's not with the ganglion cells, they're not pushing anything through. I believe that the bowel had expanded and it got to a point where it was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger inside her. At that point, they requested us to be transferred up to Evelina. And that was a whole nother palaver. There was a nurse, fantastic triage nurse there with us. She said, I'll take them up. Doesn't matter. I'm going to go over my hours. I don't care. I want to get them up there. I'll go with them. And I still remember the nurse in charge there. Shut it down. No, you're not going over your hours. And I just looked at this woman. I thought, wow. Like, you've got nurses here that are going above and beyond. And you're stopping them just... Because the NHS, well, let's not get into that as political, but we had to wait until the morning shift for the woman who lived on campus in QEQM. There's nurse houses there. And then she turned up late, overslept. By this point, you can imagine, I've got a baby there that's had candles put in an x-ray done. She was three at the time. Ada, my other daughter, she was falling asleep in the QEQM, A&E. And then it was early hours of the morning. My cousin, who lives quite close to us, she went and stayed and took Ada and stayed there. And then she went to Laura's dad after that for a couple of weeks. And then that morning she turned up, I think it was about 7, 8 o'clock in the morning, and went up to London with Laura. But the ambulance made Laura hold the baby all the way up to London instead of putting her in the car seat and putting her... Bear in mind, Laura's just had a C-section.
And we had a car seat.
It was totally dumbfounded, but it is what it is. That morning, Laura is obviously thinking, what's going on? You know, no one's even told us. They said that the sank on the X-ray, which transpired later on to be what the malrotation, etc. Straight up to London, and it was like 100 miles an hour within such a short space of time. Everything in our lives had stopped, literally stopped. I couldn't imagine what was going through Laura's head. Coming home, getting stuff to drive straight to London, you sit there thinking, what am I taking? No one speaks to you. No one prepares you for a life that's going to be turned upside down, which gets told your new normal constantly. I think that's the worst thing. It's you've got a newborn, which you want to enjoy. You've got a mum who's just had a C-section, just wants to enjoy her new baby. And it's just gone, no. Turned upside down, straight to London. And yeah, it was just crazy. We got to London. For the first 7 days, it was up and down, up and down, up and down. The C-section had got infected because of the stress, the up and down, moving about. LED, this doctor, and they work in shifts up there, don't they, on a shift rotation. I know as a parent, you're going to go, oh, well, that's your view as a parent. Sometimes, you know, you get the wrong idea. This doctor just didn't listen to me. He just didn't listen. Didn't want to listen. Ben and my Laura's condition was getting worse. And it was the ladies on Evelina Ward who said, Laura, you need to go round to the other side of the hospital to see the doctors, because that's not right. The infection started spreading. So she waited around there for hours. LED was
HDU.
HDU, that's the word. And then Laura got seen by the doctors around there. Her dad come and picked her up for a couple of days to go home and rest, because she needed it. She couldn't function properly. She wouldn't be able to be the mum she wanted to be, being in that condition. They started with barrel shouts of Elodie after Laura had expressed a lot of milk, haven't you, to leave with Elodie to try and, you know, put her through the NG tube for her and so forth, because she wouldn't take it orally. And then she tried taking it orally, and I don't know. I do believe the initial part of diagnosing Hirschsprung's and trying to figure out if it is Hirschsprung's is hit and miss. It's trial and error. I believe so. From what I've seen and listened to some of your podcasts and then doing my own research, I do believe it is trial and error. What works for one might not work for another. And I think that's something you accept. But it was only... on the day 7, wasn't it? It was day 7. Yeah. I said to HDR, I need to go home and get LED new clothes, me fresh clothes, and bring Laura back, because Laura had gone over a couple of days, hadn't you, just to try and rest and try and do that. I got Joe from Lee. London to Randgate and hunting my little girl in a week either. And literally walk through the door and we have a phone call to say we need to get her into surgery. She'd had two previous x-rays that day that'll take her down to. And then they called first to say there's been an accident. I don't think it is really. Took her down to x-ray and hadn't secured the pump to the baby sub. And it was a student had taken her down. I understand it's very busy. You know, that there's still certain things that you do, health and safety. You do. Hadn't secured it and it had fallen and it were on the head. I'm thinking, what the hell is going on here? Like, how can you allow a pump, and they're bulky, to fall and hit her on the head, you know? There is an ending to that further on down the line. Because I can assure you it didn't go in our favour whatsoever. And then I still remember the consultant's name, Miss Kathagi. Fantastic woman. She was like, we need to get her into surgery. I just pulled up in Ramshead 2 hours later, just to change clothes. I head straight back up there to see my daughter and said, we need to get her into surgery. She's at a point where if we don't do something right this second, there's going to be a problem. There's a little boy. Elodie's currently sleeping, but I can assure you she'll be down and you'll sit here and you'll be amazed to see her. We need to get her into surgery. We need to perform surgery now before it's too late.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I literally jumped back in the car. I was there 5 minutes. I think I was at home 5 minutes. Straight back up. I remember the heavens opened on them roads. I probably was speeding, but it didn't matter. I got to London. And the next time we'd seen her was intensive care. That, nothing prepares you for that. Nothing. At all. At all. Because you've seen your baby, you know, and they've been trying bowel wash out, so I've to tell them it's not working, there's Hirschsprung's in the family. The amount of times we told this doctor and there's Hirschsprung's, and it was at shift change. That's when Miss Cafagia had come on. The first day she was on her road to saw Elodie, something was done. But you tell me why it's taken 7 days for that point. For someone not to listen to me, Laura, and telling you this is what runs in the family. No, it's not genetic. It's not genetic, okay? It's strange, but, you know, pretty sure there's a correlation there. There's a niece that's got it. There's an auntie that's got it. Now, it sort of like skips a generation. If you look at the pattern, Laura explained the family, and it's like it skips a generation each time. And she listened. She listened. And at that point, they had created a stoma. First off, just to give the bowel rest, I believe the first one was she'd rotated round the intestines again. The bands that hold the intestine in place had all grouped up at the top. And the way they explained it to us was literally like that. The intestines had ballooned, the stomach was run the wrong way, and they believe that's why it wasn't. She was frying everything up, you know. She was in there for a good few days, wasn't she?
Yes.
And then we were sat down. I can't remember the consultant's name. They sat us down again with Elodie and said that they need to perform another surgery on her. Which they would be able to tell us whether or not it was Hirschsprung's, and where the transition zone was. So do you remember the second?
Yeah, I think she was maybe 2 weeks old. Or just after 2 weeks old. And I know she was in there for over 10 hours. Because they told us to go and walk around. And we just sat there.
A long walk.
Just sat there waiting. Yeah. They said, go get some air, get something sweet. And we just sat there. We just waited for her. We didn't want to go just in case we missed them. And then we had to run up the hospital. We just wanted to be there. And I think, I'm sure they'd let us both down that time, because when she's had surgeries and procedures,
yes,
one person can go, one person waits for them both to come back. But I think this time they let us both. And we got down there and she was out of it. And then, it was horrible. It's horrible.
There was another procedure in before that one. You're about the last procedure one, the biopsies, yeah. And they all come into one. They all
merge.
The amount of procedures. There was a procedure before that because they believe they'd caught the transition zone at 55 centimetres. So just, and the woman, she sat down and she explained it. So the colon had transpired, it collapsed. And then as it went back up and transitioned into the small, so the ileal valve, instead of it, and this is the way they explained it, instead of it being mini valve in between, it was micro. Oh. So it wasn't the correct size anyway. And then what they did was they took a biopsy at 55 centimetres from the duodenum downwards and fashioned a stoma at that point. So for the next, I think it was the next week or so, I allowed it to see if it became active, how it was doing, and so forth. But in between this point, they had said because she's not getting the nutritional support from the milk and so forth, we needed to put in a central line. And we're like, well, what's the central line? You know, and they're very good explaining what it does. And I think this is where I sort of blur out what they spoke about with the central venous access and what it does, because to me it was just get it in. We need her to be functioning the way she needed to function, you know. And I think it was just after that second procedure that she had the central line put in. And she was on 24 hours a day, wasn't she? It was constant, needed. That's how that was. The second procedure, the stoma where they'd refashioned it, it was apparent it wasn't doing what they wanted it to do. They left it, so the colon's still inside with a mucous fistula next to it, and that was so the way they said it was so they didn't lose where it was, basically. Okay, I don't know, I'd lose it, but you know, okay. And I'd gone home, hadn't I? And then this is where Laura explained what they explained it before the third procedure, and I was in the van driving to go and get a load, because we were told at this point that you ain't going on.
Yeah.
Your whole life, you're going to pick up from where you live and reposition right here for however long that, you know, it takes. Bearing in mind, our other daughter was away from us with our granddad, and he's incredible. He
was our rock through that.
Yeah,
I couldn't imagine how we would have coped going through that with Ada as well. I mean, she was nearly three, and she adjusted so well, and really, we shouldn't have expected her to. There was nothing we could have done to prevent it. And he made sure she had it normal. So he took her out in London. He came and stayed for a month, I think, almost. And then he visited.
He was working.
So it would give one of us time with Elodie, one of us with Ada, and then he'd work. And then we'd both get time with Elodie, because he would stop working and be with her and do things with her and be the support. And then maybe after 2 months, we came up with the idea of having an hour with Ada together. And that was just to have dinner every night. And then one of us would return back to just, but we'd just swap from there.
And I think it was that point, wasn't it? It was recognizing what it takes away from others and how it affects everyone, not just the imminent. I mean, we the family we have is quite close knit and small, you know. And her dad, he's one man that I don't think, and it's not my dad, that's her dad. I don't think I would have coped without him there. I think he said to Laura one time, it was like he'd, with Ada, it was his daughter again. And in a way, that's nice, because obviously, you know, she loves her granddad. Honestly. But the day he brought her back, even though it was watched her, and it's like a movie. Watched, she ran down in St. Pancras, and I hadn't seen her in weeks. It was having her back, but it was also losing it for him, because it was day in, day out. But then it was just like he got everyone in his arms and just powered through. Like, and he still does to this day, you know. And he works for a big firm. He works Pfizer's. So he's working out of a WeWork in London, and he adjusted his life there. I don't think the effect of how it comes to light with our Hirschsprungs, I think there's so much more background to it than, you know, the here and now, and actually the condition it does, because the condition itself doesn't, it does restrict you, yes, but there's so many other ways in the way your body can function. But the heartache and the restriction on how you can feel, it will always be with you, you know. So I'll get back on track here. I've diverted a bit, didn't I?
Oh, it's cool. No, sorry. It's absolutely fine. I quite like these ones where we sort of jump around from bits and pieces, and block when you think about it.
Yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So then second procedure, I was on the way back home to bring everything back up. And the lady, they called me and I just pulled up at home. And I knew this meeting was going to happen. It was just we had nothing up there. And it was that point where they'd said to us that, and I still remember this, because of her care, how much care she was going to require. And I think they are duty bound to actually ask you this because of the care that's needed. And it's sad to say, but I think families do relinquish responsibility. And I don't, you know, go, well, you're a bad person for that. But when I sit back and think how much care, how much it takes away from your life, I can understand why people do relinquish their responsibility. I do. Absolutely. But I couldn't. Elodie's ours, you know. I could never do that. But they sat with Law and they said that she may never eat, drink, you know, function like a normal child would. And I think that hit home then, because of how much the Hirschsprungs had gone and it took up through a whole intestine. They knew then that the transition zone of the 55 centimetres, it wasn't the transition zone. Because prior to that meeting, we was like, well, okay, 55 centimetres is good. Like, you know, that's a good old fair size of small intestine remaining. We can work with that. And when you're told no, and you know there's another procedure coming to try and find the transition zone to see how far it had gotten, you know it's not good. But Laura told me all about that meeting because she was in there and I was on the phone.
Sorry, I was sorting out the kids. Now, is that when you was travelling back?
Yeah.
Yeah. So my dad was sitting in HDU with Elodie and Ada, and I think Ada was playing with the nurses. And, yeah, so they called me in, and I said, I don't really want to have this meeting without her dad, because he needs to be there. And she's like, you can call him, but we need to talk now, like the urgency now. And I was, like, a bit panicking, so I called Ed, and he was driving back, so we had it on this like, little car speaker thing, the phone. And they told him on the phone to begin with, they said, we think you should pull over. We don't think you should drive for this talk. And so he did. Because he was near a service station anyway. And they sat us down, well, me down and Ed on the phone. And then they said, it's not going to get better. We're not going to be able to do anything for her permanently. It's just keeping her comfortable. She will never eat. She will never drink. She will never walk or talk or crawl. She will never get to that far of her life. They said that they don't believe she'll even make it to a year old. But she has. She's coming now. And they told us, they said, if you want to give up your rights, this is the time you can do it. And I went, that's not even an option. And Ed said the same. At the end of the day, no matter what obstacles we have to face, she's our child. And I don't know what anyone else is in that situation. I can't speak for anyone else. But for me personally, I don't care if I had a day with her or 10 years of her or anything. She's my child and I will take whatever time I can. And she's proved them wrong in so many aspects. Obviously, they can't guarantee. they can't guarantee anything. It's all a bit unknown with her condition and everything. But yeah, but we took the chance to try and make the chance better for her. And I'm glad we did, because I couldn't imagine my life for her now. She is a character. She is so strong in so many different ways and very strong-willed as well. And she's just amazing, honestly. But yeah, that conversation where they said, we think you should consider it now. I said, there's nothing to consider. She's my child.
Yes.
that's the end of it.
I think with the lady, and I said, we've always said from the start, don't sugarcoat anything.
Yeah.
I need to know black and white how it is, what it entails, what her diagnosis is from the start. It's, and they were always good with that, you know, because I can't work like that. I can't live in a dream world. It doesn't work like that. And then they'd said that they hadn't got the transition zone and would have to do it again. And that's when she got to the having the lads procedure, where I didn't know until last week when I'd done the form for you, and I didn't know they took her appendix out. I didn't even read it properly, obviously. And it was then. Bear with me. Baba, Bubs. So like, she don't listen though, I tell ya. She's her own person. She's very strong-willed, this one.
Okay, though.
Oh, honestly, she keeps us on our toes. She's fantastic, honestly. And then we had our, and then she had the lads procedure, and what they said, and they explained it like this. What we're going to do is we'll go in, we will take biopsies up, and we'll do them live. We'll test them live. So they'd take a biopsy, they would send it away, they'd get the results of it straight away, literally straight away. And I think that's why it took so long for the procedure, because obviously, I think they were doing it at like 3 or 5 centimeter intervals. It was something like that they was doing. I can't be specific. I can't remember. I do apologize, but and they got down to just of the small bowel remaining 22 centimeters. So you've got the duodenum flexure, duodenal flexure coming out of the stomach, the bend, which they roughly approximate as 5 centimeters, and then from that point down to the fashioning of the stoma is 22. So it literally comes out and then goes straight down into the stone bag. Which, yes, it's long segment Hirschsprungs, but then falls under a subcategory. And these subcategories aren't quite known because no one talks about them. Because you have the total colionic ganglionosis, which is a subcategory of long segment Hirschsprungs.
Yes.
And near total. They're the more severe forms within it. But it all falls under long segment Hirschsprungs disease. And I believe, and in my own opinion, it's just my opinion, that they need to be addressed a bit more, because from listening to others speak about long segment Hirschsprungs or Hirschsprungs, whatever it may be, there's so many different forms, and it's absolutely incredible how many different forms there are. I think we sat with a consultant last week, and I don't know if he realised I look into things. And he was explaining to us the different forms of segment, long segment Hirschsprungs or Hirschsprungs, and I didn't realise until about a month and a half ago that there was skip segment, and it's like, how does that even work, you know? And it's only that consultant that we had last week that has ever classified LOD as having total colionic ganglionosis, because then it's, and it all depends on the hospital or department they're under, because some class under 30 centimeters as total colionic ganglionosis, and some I think it's a little bit more, not much more, but it's a very grey area from what I've read, very grey area. And I couldn't get my head around that, but that was what it sort of transpired to be. But, sorry, going back, when she came around from that procedure. Her name, Charlotte Holbrook, and she'd done this procedure, and she'd drawn a very detailed, and the artwork was unbelievable, and she'd drawn this in the post op report, and she'd drawn where the transition zone was prior and then where it was now. But the difference 30 centimetres can make is unbelievable. Because at the 55 centimetre mark where we thought her transition zone was, we were thinking, yeah, it may adapt. And it's called bowel adaptation, which happens in the first 2 years of life. It goes through a stage of adapting with the Hirschsprungs, and that's when they do the reduction and they go, right, we're going to try and we'll test it to see if the residing bowel adapt to a function of what the bowel should do. And where it took it down to the 27, including the duodenum altogether, it sort of puts the possibility of that doing that at very, very minimal. And when she explained that to us, it was like, well, okay, so what do we do from here? Then we were told that she would have the TPN for life, that's inevitable. Because the remaining bowel wouldn't take in the nutritional value of what she needs. But then you also run the risk of, because it's so short and the stoma's so up high, you run the risk of dehydration or losing all the electrolyte and so forth. And that was quite hard to take, I think, because you see other babies, and I know you shouldn't compare your life to others, but you do. Let's be real, we're all human. You look at other babies around you and you're so happy for them. You are. And this is where I think for law, I can never imagine it, because from a man's point of view and a father's point of view, I mean, you're watching your whole world crumble. You are. And you're seeing others and you go, well, why her? Why have you done that to her? Like, you know, she's a child. She ain't done anything to deserve that. And then where law's concerned, she wants to take on that mothering responsibility, but it's been taken away from her each step at a time. And as a dad, you just want to go, no, you can't do that. Let me give my baby back. You know, you do. It's just the way you function, I think. But where she was on, I think it was 1 mil an hour through, because she had a peg put in then as well, didn't she? Peg tube. She had a peg tube put in at the same time. Sorry, forgot about that one. That was another one.
She was on, she had an NG tube for a while though, and they kept the NG tube in while the plague was healing to make sure everything was okay.
That's what. Yeah. And she was on 1 mil an hour. I thought, wow. Like, it's a drop. It's literally a drop. And you're watching other babies have like 3 ounces at this age. I thought, that's how can a disease. How can it take over so much, you know? She's a character, as you can see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.